Forever! Dog!
Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see. My, oh, my. Bowen, look over there.
Wow, is that culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Cool.
Wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
Already, there's a lot of culture to discuss up top.
First of all, this is what I have to address.
Mm-hmm.
Our guest has a mug that he's drinking coffee out of right now, and you fully gooped and gagged and laughed.
I laughed so
at the words on a mug, at a mug joke.
Okay, because I hadn't seen this mug before. Is this mug in the studio, HPE? Okay, and to know that there's been comical mugs around the studio and I haven't seen them, it really makes you question everything.
So
in my mind needs to be expanded.
Just read the mug, because I don't understand.
So imagine reading this for the very first time and getting to the end of the sentence and what it must have felt like to get to this punchline. This mug says, "The captain is always right, and I'm the captain."
Mm.
I think it's very funny.
Very Captain Phillips.
It's, you know what? It's mug humor.
Mug humor is specific. Mug humor is different than dad humor.
Oh.
It's its own subculture of humor.
You know the thing about mug humor? It doesn't have to be... It doesn't have to be super sharp. It doesn't have to be, you know, Tina Fey.
Uh-huh.
It can just be, it can be light humor.
Yes.
And you can get the same thing out of it as you would sitting in front of an episode of Tina Fey.
An episode of Tina Fey. Mm-hmm. You're right. But that, shouldn't the bar be raised on mug humor? I think we can just equalize everything across all platforms.
You always want more. You do. And you're never satisfied with enough.
Mm.
It's really a thing about you.
Sure. I never, ever, ever want for more with our guest. Does that make sense?
Well, here's what I was saying. What I would say.
Does that statement make sense to you?
As someone who makes no sense the majority of the time, I would say I will take it, but it again.
I never want for more from our guests.
I think here's the way you should say it. Our guest never leaves me
wanting more.
No. Our guest always leaves me wanting more.
No, that's not good.
No.
See,
okay. Our guest is so fucking good. How about that?
You are fucking what's her face? Lil Mama on America's Next Dance Crew?
America's Next Top Dance
Next
Crew.
Next Top Dance Crew. It was Lil Mama.
Lil Mama was famous.
She was famous. She did not know how the English language works.
She was like, "I love the fire that you brought, and you extinguished that fire."
And she goes,
"You extinguished that fire with that performance.
I love you guys so much. You always cease to amaze
me. It's actually Rule of Culture number 94. You always cease to amaze me.
And so
she was iconic.
She was iconic. But oh, remember when she went up on stage at the VMAs
for no reason. Never forget.
I had a Lil Mama moment where I said something that you knew, the audience knows what I'm trying to say, but it's not said in the right way.
This is my whole life. Yeah. I don't know my words. I do know my heart.
Oh,
this is
thank you.
You know, it's
wait a minute. Speaking of little podcast catchphrases, Matt is wearing, and we're eating grapes. Mm. Fruit is what candy is based on. Short.
I have to ask a question. Who brought the grapes?
I brought the grapes. And grapes,
thank you, bitch.
Grapes are like candy.
I am wearing right. Grapes are like candy. In fact,
fruit is what candy is based
there
on.
There is many pieces of candy that is based on grape.
There is many pieces of candy.
And so what I'm wearing right now is a little piece of merch that says fruit is what candy is based on, which is the dumbest sentence in the world, and it wasn't even said by me.
It was by Sudie Green.
Yes.
And fruit is what candy is based on. I think about
a
this
smart,
every day.
Dumb bitch.
I was eating dried mango last night.
Mm-hmm. Good for you.
I've been really good about my late night eating.
I have not.
Instead of ordering from like a grilled cheese from a diner at like 2 in the morning, I munched on dried mango, and I thought, this is candy. Fruit is what candy is based on.
Before we bring in the guest, I want to just talk one more thing about, because you brought up food that's not good to eat.
Uh-huh.
I'm shocked that you and the guest don't have a history with Checkers, the restaurant Checkers, the fast food restaurant Checkers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can talk about this.
We're going to talk about this for the majority of the episode today.
Nah, I don't know.
there's a Checkers anyway on like 14th and
there's a lot
at first. And I was like fucking blown away that there was a Checkers.
There's a lot of Checkerses.
Well, I didn't know about this. And so all the culturistas in New York, now you know, there's a fucking Checkers in New York, and it's on 14th and between 14th and 13th on like First Ave. And
there's one here in Brooklyn. There's one on Court Street.
Don't tell me that.
Watermarked?
Earmarked?
Earmarked. On your maps?
I don't know, bitch.
Okay. All right. I love our guests
Truly.
So much.
I just did the corporate retreat that this that our guest, our fabulous guest, did as his character, Gordon.
Gordon.
And let me tell you something, each and every person in the audience was more than tickled. They were thoroughly entertained. And I was like, that's because this is like a fucking confident ass performer that's just like good. It's just so funny and appealing.
And the voice is pinpoint precise. Yes. I love it.
I very much but like also, exactly what I look for in an experience same. Of watching a performer.
But then, you know what the deeper pleasure is?
What's the deeper pleasure, bitch?
Is getting to know him as a friend.
You came back from Fire Island trip, and literally this was born yet, because I did not go. I famously like skipped out on the trip to go experience some time in Los Angeles and get back to really my roots.
Yes. What did I say?
You said, we have a new Judy.
We have a new Judy.
Well, not that we weren't always Judys, but like but you came back from this trip and you were like, you had an experience. You had had like a next, well, the experience was acid.
We
but also
acid.
Like you also like fully were like, I have a new like top person in my life and it's Joe Casamaker. And I was like, I already co-signed. I'm already there. I'm already on board. And it's as if I had the experience myself.
Yes. I mean, just the true grew of the commute. Do you know what
true
I'm saying?
True grew of the commute. And also, you know, all the boys are talking about
oh, some pictures.
You know, let's just say he tickled us in more ways than
Don't do this. Don't lead with the sex.
I never lead with sex. It's 6 minutes and 14 seconds
okay,
in.
Okay, all right.
I'm not going to talk about sex. You know, every every 6 seconds I think about sex. I waited 6 minutes.
Okay, now...
It's time.
It's time to please bring in our guest for today,
Joe Casamaker.
Wow, what an intro.
Oh,
what an intro.
And can you believe we didn't even say the plug that we're supposed to do?
Oh my God,
get
the plug.
Real,
get
the
real.
Show.
The spectacle.
Hello. Right.
Such a fun show. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
I truly believe that we are like war pals after
we are.
Fire
we
Island.
Truly are war pals.
You know what I remember so vividly is the image of you. This was at the peak of our... LSD.
At the LSD, yeah.
Moment.
Just moment as we all went back into the house and you're like, I need to chop some fruit.
Oh my God. Oh.
And
this was
up
a psychotic moment.
It truly felt psychotic.
We were like, are you sure we should be touching knives at all?
And we're all just in the kitchen screaming like lunatics. And
oh my God.
Joe has like a knife with him.
Oh shit.
And he's just like pairing. He's scoring the thing of the pineapple, opens it up, and then he does this hand move. He does this like violent chop, like with one
violent?
Hand. Didn't stabilize the pineapple. Just goes, back, 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 and I was like, truly something visceral. Like
oh my God,
it stressed me out.
I don't remember this at all.
I was like,
does it sound safe? It doesn't sound safe.
It was not safe at all.
It was not safe. I mean, it wasn't safe, but. That was the thrill.
That was the thrill. I mean?
But that was the
honestly,
moment.
Dangerous.
Dangerous. It was.
And then like it was the chop, chop, chop. And then all of us, I think me, Max, Peter, we were all like, wait, let's be careful. Like we all like had a communal moment of like, hold on, wait, stop.
Because especially I feel like when you're on acid, it's like, and like there could be something that dangerous that could happen.
Yeah,
you do consider it deeply.
Yes,
I mean, if that had happened, if I had cut off a finger on acid on our final day of Fire Island, can you imagine?
No, that wouldn't be the way.
Imagine.
It goes in the book.
It would be a great book chapter.
Look, it would have been a good but yeah.
Do you guys feel this way? I feel like I'm constantly living in fear that like the times that I've done it already have like cut a hole in my brain and I can't.
I don't feel this way.
Okay.
I've done it twice. I did it that one time.
Yes.
And then I did it with my brother.
Oh, fun.
And his wife and their friend at my mom's house in Connecticut. And it was like amazing.
Great. Yeah.
It was so fun. But it also was not nearly as intense as it was
the
on Fire
time,
Island.
Yes.
The first time, I think
was
we took
insane.
A very, very light dose.
Yeah.
But then on Fire Island, it was like, I am not on Earth.
No,
right now.
No.
Yeah.
You guys,
I am in another place.
Yes.
It seemed like it was a real moment that you guys had.
Like the second time, the first time with Joe, like the floor would move.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Like the sky was like.
Screaming.
Screaming rainbows. I was like. I've reached the astral plane.
Yeah.
I will never leave.
So that time that we did it together upstate after that, was that like an ideal moment?
That was an ideal one. And like that was one where we just like rolled around in the grass.
Yeah.
Studied
That's
leaves
so fun.
And acorns. It was fun.
This was the good moment. I don't think we've talked about this on the pod,
okay.
But there was a moment where it was the four of us and then Mo Fry Pasek was there and she had not imbibed.
Oh boy.
But she's just on that plane anyway. So I was like, are you going to be okay? Like we're all going to be doing this LSD. And she's like, oh no, you'll see. You're coming. coming to my level. I was like, oh my god, cool, great. Oh my god. And I which I loved.
I love
and
that.
So then we're all sitting under this tree, and I had just like cried a lot. And yeah, you guys all listened to me, and that was very powerful.
It was very early on. Yeah.
I knew during the trip that I would have like the emotional breakthrough. That's why I was excited about it. It happened like 30 minutes into it. I was like, okay, cool, this is over.
It's like the second the LSD touches your tongue, it's like, I was here I go.
I was like, I think what I really need. And then I just like sat in a hammock for an hour, and that was gorgeous. My favorite part was we're sitting under this tree. I had just had this breakthrough, and then we're all like holding hands, and like, so this spider walks up.
Mo
Frypasek goes, okay, I just want everyone to know that the spider right there on the floor is a brown recluse.
Are you serious?
I'm dead
this
ass.
This is exactly not.
And she goes, that's a brown recluse, and it's one of the most poisonous spiders in the world. I think what we should do is thank the spider because it's not hurting us, and then we'll all walk away. Because I think we've actually had the moment here. And then we've all agreed that we actually all had the moment under the tree that we needed to have.
My mouth is fully open.
Yeah, you're agape.
I am shocked.
You are gaping. And so we all literally turned to the spider, and the brown recluse thanked the spider, got up, moved. And then we had another moment somewhere else. I did look up the brown recluse later. It is not native to that area.
No.
I do, but you know what? But
also, the brown recluse is... a recluse.
It doesn't go outside.
It's like it doesn't walk out on the grass.
Oh my god! It's all coming back to me now.
Yeah. Wow. I mean,
but that was a gorgeous mom.
It was a gorgeous mom, and we've had many gorgeous moms with each other.
Yeah, we have
in this circle.
History, capital H.
Capital H.
I mean, we all went to the university.
Nayu.
Okay, this is the thing. We all went to different schools.
Yeah, and there's there's a lot of rumors about where we all went.
There's a lot of rumors flying.
Lot of rumors are flying.
We have to address this. Iowa Debris says there's a vicious rumor going around. Our guest, Joe Castle-Baker, was at ETW.
The Experimental Theater Wing.
At Tisch.
Which is, Joe, please address that.
When I heard that, at first I went, okay, I'll take this head on. And I was very flattered that people could imagine me barefoot, you know, doing whatever they do there.
Rolling on the floor. Screaming to unlock the truth.
Exactly.
Yes.
But I went to Gallatin.
Gallatin.
Which is the ETW of the...
If we look
at the studios in the Tisch School,
yes,
and then we map it out, bigger picture, all of the schools at NYU, we could say Gallatin is the ETW. What is Cap 21?
Now that we've done,
And I want to debunk a rumor right now.
Yes.
I did not go to Cap 21 despite being annoying and singing a lot and having like a big stage face.
So Cap 21.
I did not go to Cap 21.
Famously.
Musical theater.
Musical theater. Lady Gaga's erstwhile studio.
Right. Gaga went there.
And so, okay, here's the thing. Yes, you're so right. Gallatin is ETW writ large.
And explain Gallatin because everyone might know.
Gallatin is the school where you make up your own major.
Yes.
But basically, here's the tea. If you go to Gallatin, you're studying English. It's not. You're studying English. It's just books. You're writing essays. And you're learning, like, literary theory. You're not like, oh, wow, I'm really forging my own path. It's like, no.
So how does it work? Are there classes in Gallatin that you can take? Or because you're in Gallatin, you get to kind of select classes from all the different schools?
You can select classes. Like, I took, like, weird graduate courses in psychology, like, my last semester. I was in a bunch of programs where you like couldn't get in unless you were in that specific program. But like, if you write an email and say like, I go to Gallatin, the professor is impressed or something, which is psycho.
They just have to listen to you. They're required by law.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
And so it's the Gallatin School of Individualized Study, and you did name your own major, right?
Like, yeah.
What was yours?
Mine was psychoanalysis and early modern anti-theatricality.
Ooh.
Oh my God. Explain what that last part means.
So there was like, there was a backlash to theater. And there were like people that saw theater as like feminizing men.
Yeah.
And so I looked at like Marlowe and Shakespeare in their, I looked at their writing and I looked at ways in which they were, was, I don't even know. This is so,
no,
it's
so
crazy
this.
Like that I did this or like, it was so bullshit. But like, I tried to look at the writing to figure out like passive ways that they were like fighting back against this like backlash. So like by, and it would be stupid things like, oh, like setting the play in Venice instead of in London, you know, would be like, that is a technically like a, you know, passive aggressive way of getting back at like something.
At like
there.
Whatever societal, cultural force was happening.
It was
London.
All bullshit, but I thought I was, oh God, cutting
no,
edge.
I don't, yeah. I don't think it is bullshit. I mean, bullshit. I think like writ large, like I think someone like me, who like, I was thinking to myself, how could you be 18 years old and literally think, I'm going to do something that's this
I'm gonna
intellectual?
Know.
Because I literally was like, I was like going to school and I was like, I was in liberal studies for my first year and I was just like, yeah, I'm probably going to do broadcast journalism. Probably want to do what Ryan Seacrest does.
Oh.
And literally, it's like you were like, I'm actually, even though the
no,
word
that's not
psychoanalyst.
What I did. That's not even what I did though when I first went to college.
Uh-huh. What was?
Because I went to Purchase first.
Right. Oh, okay. Right. And were you studying acting?
Yes. I was in the conservatory there.
Uh huh.
So, hello, that's a tough one.
Purchase, it's a good school. Did you want to transfer? School.
But I, well, I dropped out of college like 2 weeks before my sophomore year.
Wow.
Oh.
Which is, which was a crazy time. And then I had to reapply to colleges again. And I took, it was so crazy. I was living in Flatbush. I took the ACT at a Catholic school in Flatbush. And when I was like 19 or 20, and I was surrounded by these like 16, 17 year old boys.
Yeah.
And it was me, this like white 19 year old hipster, taking the ACT
in Flatbush
at a Catholic boys school.
Yeah.
I was like,
perfect.
Wow, cool. This is what my life is right now.
And you were like, I think Gallatin.
I want to go to Gallatin.
So but wait, then you got into Gallatin. So what do you have to do to get into Gallatin to like prove that you're going to be able to like.
God, I have no idea.
Yeah,
what
it just happened.
I was just like, I am a gay, independent mind. And then they were like, you're in.
We want it.
You're
we
in.
Want.
Can you do something around anti-theatricality?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
We're looking for someone to do something around anti-theatricality. Did you ever run into the person whose major was happiness? He was famous at the school. There was someone in Gallatin whose major was
there
happiness.
There were so many people at Gallatin who like thought that they were like, I am the quintessential Gallatin student.
Yeah.
And like, look at who God knows where they are now, you know?
I mean, wait, truly like, but just hearing you say the person who majored in happiness was famous around campus.
He was a campus celebrity. I don't know who that person was.
I think the famous one was the guy who studied evil.
Oh, I hadn't heard about that. What the fuck?
No, the famous Gallatin student was like fucking Ashley Olsen or Mary Kate Olsen, right?
Yeah,
oh,
also,
I mean literally.
Rooney Mara.
Miss Rooney was in Gallatin.
Yeah,
I think
Gallatin because of the flexibility.
Uh-huh. So she could it could cater to her schedule.
Exactly.
And also didn't Hermione go to Gallatin?
No, she went to Brown, but then she probably transferred
to
Gallatin. Because again,
Miss
the flexibility.
Ms. Watson.
Right, Miss Watson.
Well, I don't know. I never really like.
Here's the thing.
Saw any of the celebrities that were discussed as being
me
there. I saw James Franco once, and I couldn't believe his boots.
He was wearing some fucked up boots. Whatever. My celebrity sighting was just Malcolm Gladwell at Bobst. I was like, wow, a celebrity.
Yeah.
It's like such an asshole. Yeah. I feel like I was not good at college. I was not good.
I don't think
at
any
it.
Of us were good at college.
Some people are.
If you were good at college, I feel like it's the same thing like if you were good in high school. It's like you peak and then it's like that's it.
Yeah.
Like
wow.
The rest of your life is like you know, just living in the memory of that.
What to the rubric of being good at college?
I was, I just wasn't a good, so I was a chemistry major and I graduated with a BA instead of a BS. And most people in the program graduated with a BS because it was like, they maintained a certain GPA. They took certain classes. I was a BA because like, I just took shitty classes and I never went to class and I never did well in exams. Like I was just not a good student. Like on an academic level, I was not good.
I find that hard to believe, though.
I find it very hard.
Because you're so smart.
But like, I truly was bad.
Well, being so smart and then being a good student, I think is like, I think so true, you have the most academic potential probably of anyone I know. And so, but I understand that knowing that, which I think you do know, and also having skipped class a bunch, I get you saying you weren't good at college.
That's what I'm
like. I feel like I'm not, I don't sound smart often, but that's also because I don't care. I have chosen to be like a poo-poo dumb comic for my whole life.
Same.
So like it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But when I was in college, I wanted to get straight A's because I thought I was going to go to grad school.
Uh-huh.
So I thought I needed to like, you know, be really good.
Was the end game for you like academia stuff?
I wanted to be a therapist.
Oh, wow. Cool. Great, great.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
When did that change?
Well, I was like working in a research lab that it was really cool.
Yeah.
Like I would watch videos of married couples fighting about their problems in their marriage. And I would watch them talk about their problems in their marriage before this like intervention thing that we were studying.
Yeah.
And then after this program that they took. It was like a self-study course on marital counseling from these couples. Cool. Yeah. It also taught them like childcare. And then also we were like in the School of Dentistry at NYU. So like they taught them like weird dental care stuff too. And so I would look at the fight before the intervention and then afterwards. And then I had this like rubric that I would use to decipher whether or not they've been, it's an improvement or not.
Ah.
And so I would like turn this qualitative data into like numbers.
Oh, great.
That's interesting.
Would think, but then you're, oh my God, these marriage fights are boring.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's the thing. You think it's going to be serving you
think
drama.
It's so juicy, but then it's like, I wish you would open up. And then it would be like 10 minutes of silence afterwards where the guy would be like, yeah, you're right.
When the conflict is you don't open up, you have to imagine what you're going to watch or someone.
Yeah, exactly.
Have a hard time opening up.
It's not like them being like, when you fucked my sister, I was so ruined. Like, it's not that at all. And I wished for that.
Oh my God.
Did you ever get anything fun?
Oh my God, once. But I don't think legally I'm allowed to say.
I think he's allowed to say if he doesn't name them, but no, just don't
name
it.
But there was one that was really, really juicy.
Okay.
And I was like, oh God, where are you guys?
Oh wow!
But then I also think the really juicy couples are probably the ones that suffer the most.
I know. Well, the thing is, I think that like we forget that like this is gonna sound so insane.
Oh no!
But as such dynamic people,
no,
we have more dynamic problems.
No.
And when you're basic, basic problems.
I was gonna say the exact opposite, where it's like as we get older.
Yeah, no, we're not like, interesting.
Well, I'm saying our problems just flatten out across everybody in our age group, where it's like, I hope so too, where it's like, this is just every marital problem now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where every relationship problem might have a similar thing to where it's like, well, he wants his alone time, and which is like boring stuff because it's so normal. I don't know.
Well, actually, I am thankful I did it because I learned like really practical things to help with like fighting.
Yeah,
And like the thing is, the like secret for all like marital resolution is like slowing things down like to a glacial pace in conversation. Like you you have to take hours to like talk about a single issue and you have to be extremely, extremely slow.
Yes. Like a podcast.
Almost.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not kidding. But that's brilliant. That's really good.
So if you're listening and you're
struggling,
slow down, babe.
Yeah. Honestly, that is because I feel like when Henry and I used to fight, like it was when we would have arguments, it kind of was like, whoa, how did we get here so fast?
Yeah.
And I think
it's breathless. It's
because
like,
you want to be like, but then what about this? But then what about this? Like,
yeah,
you just bring up
yeah.
so many things that you're like, you don't even remember anymore because you can mention something where like the other person fucked up.
Yes.
But then you're focusing on that. But then they're focusing on the thing that, you know, you fucked up at. So each of them thinks like they're a victim and they might be right.
Yeah.
But if you're going to, you know, think that way, then you're not going to do anything. You know, nothing's going
to
happen.
I feel there's also always an instinct in any kind of argument to win the argument.
Yes.
And so I would find that sometimes, like when I would have tough discussions, really with anyone, we'll say relationships, but it'll be clear to me that I've done something wrong, but I've already begun this game of trying to prove that I'm right, or that I didn't do something wrong, or that actually you did something wrong, and that's the reason why I did this. And it becomes this thing of like, whoa, slowing it down would make you ask yourself, like, why am I being so defensive? Why can't I just own up to what I've done?
And it's not even that hard to just drop it. Not to drop it completely, but to like, just to like release that and just be like, okay, actually, let me just take a minute to like recalibrate and just like get on your level.
Do you think that conflict is important in a relationship?
Oh, it's not whether or not it's important. It's like, it's going to happen.
Yeah, you're
it's
right.
Like, it's not like, I mean, I would say if you don't have any conflict, you're lying.
Yeah.
Like you clearly have conflict, but you're like, you're just ignoring it, or you are like in denial.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Henry used to say that. I was like, I don't like fighting. And he'd be like, well, it's important that we sometimes have arguments because we have to get to the root of what's going on. And I was like, well, I don't like it.
Yeah.
But that's...
But you have to fight.
Yeah.
Own up to things.
When Peter and I first started dating, Peter's my boyfriend.
Yeah.
He's
I
love Peter too.
I
know, right?
Let me tell you something. Like, it's really culture.
My secret is I hate him.
It's really culture number 19. You better love your boyfriend.
But we would fight. Like, we would get into... Well, I think it was also kind of like... we're both, like, fiery. We both have, like, strong opinions.
Yes.
What is your astrological sign?
I'm a Capricorn, so I'm stubborn, apparently.
Henry was a Capricorn.
Yeah.
Henry is a Capricorn. He's still with us.
Yeah, he is.
What element is that?
It Earth. Is Earth. And Earth. Peter is?
He's a Virgo.
Which is?
I don't know.
Whatever.
You don't care about this.
Fire? Well, I'm sure. Well, yeah.
Continue what you were saying.
But we would actually fight more like when we first started dating than we do now. We had like, we would have, because we would be like, and it wouldn't be fights. It would be like, you can't say that to me, or like you can't speak to me that way.
That's great.
Because we would like, or like little things that would be like rules that we would set for each other. And then like, I think because we just like listened, now we don't really fight. I guess. I don't know. I think it's kind of rare to see that, or maybe not. I don't know, but
you're setting up, if you're doing it early on, and what's nice is that it might just set up like a model for what this looks like.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's like, well, nothing's gonna be as bad as that, but it's also you understand.
Well, we were like getting to know each other.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was like,
and so wait, do you like, you don't have to get too into detail about what those early fights were about, but if it was something like, you can't say that to me,
he would like, say like jokingly things like, oh, you're such an idiot or something. And I'd be like, you can't say that.
I love
and
that.
if somebody heard you say that, and this is so horrible, if Peter hears this, he's gonna be like, people are gonna think I'm a fucking
No, really sweet. He's the best.
He's really, really, really a good
person. Yeah.
And this was just something, you know, like sometimes you'll say to a friend, like, oh, you're such an idiot or something.
A goofy thing.
But to me, I was like, you can't do that to
me. That's not
because if somebody and I think I was really clear, I was like, if somebody heard you say that,
yeah,
it would be embarrassing to
right,
you.
Of course.
Yeah, that's the best way to frame it. It's like, it comes at a cost to you to do what you're doing. And like the best, simplest way to just catch all everything is just to be like, you're embarrassing yourself.
Exactly, yeah.
Ooh, Gusha.
I know, that is strong. Chills.
Chills.
It gave me a chill when you said that. And you looked in my eyes and you did the...
I did the gesticulation.
You did the gesticulation and it made me shake.
It made me shake.
It in fact made me shake.
That's like my favorite thing, when I'm able to do that. When I'm able to, like, I remember this one time when I was in acting school, we had this like final moment my freshman year where we were all sat around in a circle and we said things to each other.
Yeah, I love that.
Was like, I wish that was life. I wish that was just circles and talking.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But I said this one thing to this guy and he was like, I don't know. Oh God, I can't believe this is what the conversation was. It's so cringy. But he was like, Joe, I just don't think I've ever moved you. And then I looked at him and I said, this was a lie, but I just said it. I was like, I don't know when I'm not moved by you.
Oh, this was in class?
This was in class. And then the teacher...
No, you did go to ETW, bitch. That's the most ETW thing I've ever heard.
But then the teacher was like, stop. Everyone stop. Did you just feel that? The air changed in the room.
This is the most NYU thing I've ever heard.
It's purchase.
Oh, purchase. That was purchase?
That was purchase.
Come on. Make that purchase.
I know, right?
Purchase? Woof.
That's so good.
I know. It was probably the peak moment of my life.
Here's the thing, though. Like, sometimes people, like, okay. So, in being involved in comedy now, I think that a lot of people look at that, and I think maybe it's, like, more a projection thing, but they say they're all scared of being vulnerable. You know what I mean? Like, it's this thing, like, this thing of, like, you never want to be real. Yeah. But it's, like... And it makes me say, like, I also don't think that's true, because I think one of the most vulnerable things you can do is get up on stage and, like, expose sense of humor.
And also, all we fucking do is be earnest on fucking shit like this.
Exactly.
Like, whatever.
Yeah.
I also think there's been a shift, but, you know,
even if you are lying or putting up a front, like, that's still a part of who you are.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're creating that. That's like that's a part of you.
Yes. Yeah.
It might not be the most, like, vulnerable, weak, you know, part of you, but it's something that you believe in.
Exactly.
As a, like, this is what I want to put as, like, my identity in this moment.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's
not,
like,
just
still
you're
revealing
not crying
something. Yeah.
Doesn't mean that you're not vulnerable. But
right.
I think, like, some people who would have that criticism about comedy would think they'd be moved by something like what you just described.
Yeah.
But we're now able to sit here and unpack the fact
and
that
laugh.
It was like, you didn't even really mean it when
no.
you said that. And yet this man was like, the energy in the room changed. And you're kind of sitting there probably in the back of your mind being like, whoa, that's crazy that they're receiving it this way, because it wasn't genuine.
I mean, it wasn't genuine. I mean, it was just me wanting to be, like, to have gravitas. Like, in the moment, I just wanted to make the choice that felt like I was in some kind of moody thing, which is what, I don't know, a lot of acting schools like that.
Totally.
It's just like you're kind of like brainwashing yourself.
100%.
It's acting school mixed with that particular time, I think, because what was this, like 2008?
It was 2009,
2009, like just remember this, at least for me, like, what felt peak culture at that time for me was, like, fucking Animal Collective, Sufjan, stars, you know, fucking Conor Oberst. Like, that was, like, it was this whole framework of, like, being so emotionally tortured that was, like, cool.
I think that's being 19. I really
do think so. I agree. I think part of it is, like, that age.
Totally. I'm not saying that's, that was, like, specifically my
people
little...
are going through that literally right now. I think they're trying so hard to be poignant.
Yeah.
And I think, like, also trying so hard to prove your talent.
Totally.
And also, and I was actually just sitting here thinking about it, and in an acting school, if you actually were able to project that feeling of being moving, you did perform that.
Yes.
And if it was successful for those people, slay, bitch, you acted.
If the air shifted.
I did it, you know?
Yeah. You won the award in that one.
I guess, yeah. I mean, it is so strange, like, the things that they teach you in acting school as, like, because at least now that I'm a comedian, I feel like part of why I like comedy more than acting is that, like, you have, like, a little bit of distance, which is, like, good.
Yeah,
totally.
You have, like, a little... I mean, and then there might be some people who are like, why would you want distance? Don't you want truth or something? When it's, like...
Not fake truth.
Yeah, or, like,
it depends on the medium. Like, for stand-ups, if this is such a lazy way to box, like, just compartmentalize this, but, like, for stand-ups, like, that is what they're seeking is truth or an observation. For... if you're doing, like, a Gordon, or if you're doing, like, a character, or if you're writing a sketch that's, like, it's something that is somewhat removed from what you're trying to say. It's being couched in something else. I don't know. That's like, not exactly an accurate thing.
I feel that this whole thing of, like, people who are critical of comedy, it's insecurity. It's them just being, like, unable to understand how to be funny purposefully.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I think. I mean, whenever I experienced, like, trying to do comedy with actors at school, like, for example, like, we were in Pop Roulette, like, which was our sketch group, and that was, like, half people who had just done straight up acting, and half people, and, like, me and Sudi and you who had been in the comedy groups and had no experience really on stage. And the fusion of that was very interesting, because when you ask someone who has just purely been an actor to do comedy, the insecurity that comes out is so profound.
Yeah.
Like, and it's such fear, and it's incredible to watch someone who's been deeply trained in like Shakespearean classical acting be scared about landing a joke and feel the pressure that comes with like being compelling on stage in this way. And it's like, I'm of two minds about it. It's like, how could you have been through all, what a waste to have gone through all of this years of an expensive training and then feel self-conscious when you get on stage with certain material. And I'm not saying self-consciousness ever really goes away, but it's like, you should feel comfortable performing text no matter what it is.
You should like not have to think too hard about like timing a fart cue with your face. Like, you know?
Yeah.
And then at the same time, by the same token, I also think that kind of means like, acting training is not necessarily at all the only way to become good at that.
Yeah.
Well, I think it all
also
works.
Like really
it's really
old fashioned. Yes, it's really it old is. Fashioned. Yeah. It's like so out of touch with like the experience of actually trying to act in the world. Like me being able to cry when I'm upstage right, because that is like the most vulnerable location on the stage floor for me, is like the last possible thing that I should be spending 4 months trying to do.
Yeah.
Like, I should be learning how to fucking wait tables. You know what I mean?
Oh or
like,
God.
I don't know. I mean, and I'm sure that's like a cliche thing to hear. Like, I'm sure everybody who's an actor knows that now or whatever, but it is, it does feel kind of like acting training programs are kind of like huckster. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, I think the people that make decisions about how those schools are run don't necessarily super care if everyone in that studio is successful in the industry, because I think that literally, like with something like experimental theater wing.
Because
some people do 4 years at that studio,
right,
and they've never acted once on camera. And then they have a problem getting an agent, or they have a problem doing a commercial audition, or even understanding how to behave on camera. And it's like, how could you have gone through a 4-year program then try expect?
Is that ever promised though, you think?
Like, what do you mean?
Like the people who run these programs, they're not advertising this as a thing of like, well, by the time you get out,
you'll be successful.
Yeah, and I think
also,
no,
it's
like,
not. It's not. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, when we were at NYU, like, there was that huge, like, performance art boom, like, with Marina Abramovich and all that. So, like, everyone who was at the experimental theater wing was like, I don't need to be on SVU. I can be
I'm an artist.
Marina Abramovich.
Yeah.
God.
And it's like, well, yeah, I guess you could.
You're
I mean,
like, making that decision to try to be, quote-unquote, Marina Abramovich at 18.
I know.
And it's, you will feel, and I just think if we were all being, like, if we're all actually looking at this, like, trying to have a career, which if you're going to a university that costs upwards of, let's take NYU out of it, that costs upwards of $150K at when all is said and done, which is what these things cost, you should try to be professionally prepared.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I don't think that doing four, unless you're extremely in an extremely privileged situation, doing 4 years of pure, just only theatrical training and expecting to make that a professional career, I think it would be better for everyone if we just gave a more well-rounded thing. Like, everyone that goes to acting school should have an on-camera class, at least a class.
Yeah.
Just, like, experience what it's like to try to replicate the professional experience just for a little while.
Yeah.
Because it makes me sad to know that, like, I mean, come on, almost everyone we went to school with, I'm going to say 80% of the people aren't doing it anymore.
I know.
Or it's like, sad.
Even a business class so you could learn like self-promotion and like
branding,
whatever. You know, like those things are really practical things that
every
we utilize
actor
now.
Should know, but it's that thing. I'm sorry to like relate it back to this, but like that BuzzFeed article about burnout.
Did you read this?
Was this the one? Was it BuzzFeed?
It was BuzzFeed News. It was like this huge thing about how, how millennials are the burnout generation.
Yeah.
Like, and it's because, so here's the thing. It's like, what you're expressing is like, it's a shame that a program doesn't prepare you in a fully holistic professional way once you're in the industry. Like, is that also, I don't know, this sounds so obnoxious, but just like go with me. Like, is this also that thing where it's like, our generation is a product of this mentality of, well, our parents were promised a great life and retirement if they, as long as they got a good education, went to college, went to vocational school, whatever. So if you do A, then you will get outcome B, and that is a good outcome. And so that what they passed down to us was, well, if you take piano lessons, if you go to like tennis camp, if you if you go to SAT prep and get into a good college, then you will be set for life. And that is not true. Mm-hmm. That will, yeah, or that promise was broken on our generation. Yeah. And so it's, is it that same thing where it's like, if you come to Tisch and if it's one of the, it's, and you, and you're in one of the best acting programs in the country, in the world, then like you should be a working actor by the time you come out. Like that is also a false promise.
Right. Well, yeah, with any artistic endeavor.
Totally. Totally.
Nothing is ever promised.
But it's like, but our generation is used to this idea of if I do this, then I will get that, which is not always not true. Yeah.
And also like your trajectory changes so dramatically, like whether you like it or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so to be so pigeonholed so early is such a, it can be such a disaster down the line.
Yeah.
And I mean, people usually, you know, are adaptive and figure it out, you know, they do whatever they need to do to like make a life for themselves, I think. But like, it is so crazy that like, that you can have such a like heavy decision be forced on you at such a young age.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, like reading this article, it's like, it's so sad to me that we are still in this kind of like situation where at 18 you make a decision about where you're going to go to school and spend this exorbitant amount of money and like make this kind of career decision. I mean, the majority of people I know, and I'm taking this even out of people that pursued acting, like went to school and didn't even know the many different kinds of careers they could have.
Yeah.
How are they going to go at 18 years old when they're not even a fully formed person and decide, I'm going to spend this insane amount of money to make a decision about my career? I grew up with a girl who, she went to Towson University, also not cheap, to go be, because she liked the area and liked the school, to be an elementary school teacher. And then when she graduated, she had a breakdown because she didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know about you guys, but where I'm from, it's like there were so many teachers and it's such an easy thing to say that you want to become because you haven't figured it out. You don't figure it out in high school. So you say you're going to do this
and
thing.
People nod and smile. They're like, that's nice.
Yeah, yeah. And they say, and the guidance counselors, no shade, but they say, I can make that work. That's easy for me. I've done it before.
Yeah.
And they send you off. And it's like incredibly hard to get a job in that field.
Yeah.
And also, that is just because you see that so many times because you went to a school.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean
the reality is so different.
Yes, it's so different. And it doesn't mean you're going to be good at that. Yeah. And I think, I'm sorry, but I went to public school. I think there's a lot of bad teachers. I had a lot of great teachers, but I had also had a lot of teachers who were right out of college clearly and just put notes on the board and sat and drank their coffee while we copied shit down.
Yeah.
And I think it's all kind of cyclical and sad, and it comes from us being forced to make these big decisions so early. I just think we need to really re-examine the whole thing of like shipping kids off to school to make this big decision and spend the kind of money that we're spending.
Well, like a lot of people are like, well, that's why in Europe they have a better, like people go to vocational school and all that.
Yeah.
And I think the reality is like you can make, we can make a bunch of different changes, but like it's a symptom of life to be like 30 years old and be like, what the fuck have I been doing?
Totally.
Like no matter what you do. And so like it would be nice if we had more options than like here you go, you're about to like stomach a $200,000 debt. You know, and it's just kind of like it just sucks a little bit.
What did Peter major in?
He studied history. He studied like German
history. So funny. German history?
Yeah. Or he studied history in general, but like he focused on like German history.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
love that.
It's funny because like he loves history and knows a lot of history.
He does.
I like do not give a shit about history.
But when you have a crush on Joe's boyfriend and you have to stop.
No.
It's okay.
Honestly,
it's okay.
When I was tripping on acid, I kept looking at Peter and Joe and I was like,
beautiful.
These are the two most, like, inside and out, most beautiful people.
Meanwhile, we're like, our irises are like gigantic and we're like sweating.
I'm looking back on our photos that we took. I'm looking back at the photos that we took during the trip and I'm like, we all look insane.
We look insane.
No, but you guys actually took that one really good picture on the beach.
Oh, yeah. That was actually that was fun. It is such a beautiful
photo. Literally made me say,
noon toil hour. But, like, what was, remember that moment? Okay, wait, we just have
to. It's friends on the beach. That's the pitch.
Joe, I just have to walk through this moment with Joe.
Mm.
this was like on the downswing of the okay, well, first we start the trip on the beach during the day.
Yeah.
And it was full on psychotic episode for each of us.
For each of us, just like, wah! And then we go back into the house and we hang out in the pool.
Which was also harrowing.
Also harrowing. Back, but then the sun starts to set and we're like, let's go to the beach and look at this, at the nature. And so we walk out to the beach. And at this point, it was a cloudy day.
Most beautiful thing in the world.
Most beautiful apocalyptic thing where it was high tide and they had literally moved a house.
That's right. Oh my God.
Inland. Wow. Like 100 feet inland.
Yeah.
Cause like at the beginning of the day when we were on the beach, this house was like on these beams and this weird scaffolding was around it. And we were like, oh, they're doing something to that house. That's funny. Mm-hmm. And we were like, we set our towels down in front of it. And then by the time we went back in the afternoon, it had moved.
Like 50 yards.
50 yards. And we were, our minds were blown. We were like, oh my God, nothing is real.
Yeah.
Like this house just literally moved and then we're screaming. So and then we go to Loti, we watch the sunset on the other side of the island.
Yeah.
And then we walk back and do you remember the swan?
No. Sorry.
Joe, I will show you a picture. Wait,
swan? You took a picture of a swan?
I took a picture of us. Joe, do you remember this? The sun was setting. It was like a blue. It was blues and purples everywhere.
Yeah.
And then we walked back to the house, and there was just a single swan floating in the water by the boats. And all of us, you included.
Oh, I remember that now.
We're screaming, freaking out.
But then immediately afterwards, we also saw a mother cat with her whole litter. Remember?
Yes! Yes,
we
remember.
We were like being bombarded by nature.
Wait, this is the swan. God. Do you remember this swan?
It's literally a bird. It's just a bird in the water.
It's nothing.
Swan. It is
like, wait, let me see that.
It's a swan. Like, and then we were all screaming like, oh my God, look. We were like, oh my
bitch,
God.
That is not a swan.
This is the most basic picture of a bird I've ever seen.
That's
but
a fucking
I can totally
goose,
believe.
Bitch.
It's a goose and it's also kind of far away. It was like not even like right there.
It's a goose. It's not a swan. It's a fucking goose.
Normal. Fine, it's a goose, but all of
we'll
us...
We'll post a picture of this fucking
it
goose.
It is a normal goose.
All of us believed it to be a swan. You, I swear to God, Joe...
I guarantee I know
I'm
who
so
started
sorry.
This conversation.
You know...
Fucking Henry Kapersky.
No.
That gorgeous swan.
No, he claims
to have seen a peacock on his first acid trip. A peacock in New York City.
No.
Guarantee it was a fucking rat.
It was me, Joe, Max...
I guarantee.
Max, Peter, Henry, Joel, Kim Booster, all of us just like... freaking, pointing, screaming. Our minds are being blown by this swan in the water. Fine, it was a goose, but to us, it was a swan.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. But maybe
it's
actually,
a beautiful goose. It's just
it
not a swan.
It might have been another like freshman year circle acting moment of me putting it on.
Honestly, yeah.
Fuck. Do we still do that? We still do this, don't we?
Still what? Do what?
This freshman year performance, performing
I
the
think
self.
We do. Yeah, because sometimes, you know, you just got to have a little gravitas.
Ugh. That's fine. We do it all the fucking time on this.
Yeah,
on this
we like
fake gravitas
where we just like push
lean
ourselves.
Into it.
We lean into like, well, we have to serve this idea of what people think of. You know, I don't know. Is that crazy?
No, I mean it's,
sometimes I'm like, well, I better say something.
Oh, good,
insightful or good.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I don't know. I feel like I don't ever pressure myself to say something good and insightful because I don't think that's why people come to this store.
No, but people often love comedy. Like, I feel like this is a very old-fashioned comedy thing where it'd be like, laughing, and then, like, the truth.
Like,
it's just like, suddenly, it's like that stupid thing about, like, a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
True.
Yeah. And everyone's
if
like,
you
wow,
really
blah,
think
blah,
about
blah,
it.
Blah, blah. Yeah.
But then, like, what if the medicine is, like, something that's wrong?
Yeah,
you know what
right,
I mean?
Yeah.
Or, like, you're saying something that's stupid or, like...
100. God.
What
did you see the new Poppins?
I didn't know.
I would say don't go.
Really?
Okay.
I love M. Blunt.
I fucking live for M. Blunt. Yeah. But here's the
love
tea.
Love B. Wishaw.
Yeah.
I love B. Wishaw.
I love B. Wishaw too.
B. Wishaw actually is a crush I have. And he has a really good moment in the movie where his character kind of has like a little bit of a breakdown.
Mm.
And it was really good acting. And
did
I was like,
did he come out of the closet?
No.
I would watch
Ben
it.
Ben Wishaw,
wow.
Congratulations on your
it.
Golden Globe.
Congrats.
Did he get a Golden Globe?
He just won for a very British scandal.
Yes. Very English scandal.
A very English scandal. Mm-hmm. I would say don't go see Mary Poppins I've been calling it Mary Poppins Revenge.
Yeah.
Don't go see Mary Poppins Revenge because the first 20 minutes are like, yay, we're in the world. It's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's like a whole middle hour section, which is like, holy shit.
Is it
like,
that this is when they're in the bowl?
Like, what happens during Mary Poppins? Yeah, the first one.
That's the question. That's the big question. And you know what? No one knows.
No one remembers?
Because you remember her floating in on the umbrella.
Yeah.
She gets there to the house. There's these kids. There's a chimney sweep.
There's a mirror gag.
Yeah. There's very little conflict.
In the first one. There's a lot of conflict in this, but it's kind of like dry. And so it's literally
British,
what happened
it's
is
British, baby.
It's the first, the whole middle hour, the all of Act Two is like, oh my God. And so I literally got up and went to the bathroom, like checked my phone, came back. It was the end of Meryl's part. I completely missed Meryl.
Oh, God.
And then the last 30 minutes gets good. And I actually was crying. There's this whole thing with balloons and picking a balloon and flying in the air, finding your inner child. And I was like, this I get.
Okay.
I can get on board with that.
A crier. I cry frequently at films.
Mm. Me too. I love to cry during a movie.
Never
me too. Because then I'm like, there it is, my humanity.
Yeah. it's so great to remember that you have a soul. Yep.
This is why I come to the movies.
Yep.
That's why I go to that store.
I never fucking cry. And I think I'm dead inside because I think I've done acid too many times.
I think that it's this thing.
This is so funny.
When you're obsessing about it, it'll become true. So don't obsess about it.
Oh.
You've done acid twice.
Yeah, you did it two times.
Which might be
our parents' generation did acid daily.
You're right.
We have friends that have done it approximately 900 times in 1 year. It's like, you're fine.
It's just Henry. And he is the better for it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And we love that. Okay, yeah. So.
Wait, we have to ask
Joe the question
Joe. And you know, it's been floating around, but we must ask the question now.
We must ask the question. I've been asking lately. You ask.
Okay, so this is the question that we ask every single guest.
I see, yeah.
And we ask the guest, what was the culture that made you say culture was for you? This is the defining pop culture in your young life that you can look back and say, oh, that's kind of why I am
I am. Thinking about this, because I was like, there's like a few different answers.
And you can
give them all.
I think one of them was when I saw Blue Man Group.
Oh, fabulous.
I love this.
Because I remember watching Blue Man Group like as a boy. And there was a moment where they took out these toilet paper guns.
Oh, yeah.
And they shot that audience with toilet paper.
Yes.
And they kept going.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, this is possible?
Yeah.
We can do this?
Yeah,
and it's the most mainstream thing.
I know.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was like, this is out there.
Yeah. No, that is ETW.
It's crazy how it is mainstream, though,
so
because
commercial.
Everything about it screams that it's not.
Yeah.
It's so unusual.
It's so avant-garde out there. It's cutting edge.
I've seen it twice. I've seen it at Astor Place, and I've seen it in Universal Orlando.
Oh yeah. I love that you selected to see it in Universal Orlando.
This is like years ago, and it was like part of the hotel deal we got was like, and you can see Blue Man Group. There's a huge theater there that does Blue Man Group.
Wow.
So you have to imagine
Blue Man Group
across the country and probably across the. I would imagine it's international.
Yeah, it is international.
They are selling out shows all the time.
It's one of the most successful shows. In China, forget it. People fucking flip.
Maybe
there's something like primordial in each of us that is a blue man.
There is a blue man in all of us.
Did you ever think of like auditioning to be a blue man? I think you'd be a great blue man.
It might have crossed my mind. It might have crossed my mind, but I think I'm too tall.
I think they always have like a tall one?
They're all very tall. You know, do you know Branson Reese?
Yeah.
Okay.
Was he a blue man?
No, he auditioned to be a blue man, and I think you would think of him as a perfect blue man, but they told him that he was too expressive. Because you have to think like, if you do really anything a lot with your face, like it's gonna really explode off stage, and because of the nature of that makeup, like you could just literally look to the side and it reads to the whole audience.
Oh my god, they told Branson Reese
he was too expressive to be a blue man.
His eyes are too big.
Like, imagining now like the gay man in charge of all of the artistic choices of Blue Man Group, who's like, yeah, you. No, not you. You. Yeah. That's a blue man. No, not you.
We need that reality show.
That's a blue man right there.
That's a blue man.
That's a quintessential blue man.
We need blue man. We need like an American Idol for Blue Man Group. And the judges are Nicole Scherzinger.
Yes.
And three others.
Santino, too.
Santino
Rice.
Merle Ginsburg.
Yes.
And Rue.
Jenny McCarthy. That's it.
Two judges from The Masked Singer and two judges from...
from RuPaul's Drag Race.
Okay. And you know what? Courtney Cox.
She should host.
She should host.
Yes. And David Arquette. Yeah. It should be a Parent Trap thing where we try to get them back together.
Yes.
Will they, won't they?
Okay. Is there, besides the toilet paper?
Yes, the toilet paper. And then this was another one I thought, like, this is so stupid, but I have this, like, memory. I think I was probably an infant. It's, like, the first memory ever I have in my life. Mm-hmm. It might be, like, a screen memory. Well, it is a screen memory, but it's, like, I have, like, this print in my mind of, like, me on the floor looking at a vase. And I, like, I'm looking at this, and I am, like, oh, wow, that is so beautiful.
Oh, my God.
And I'm tiny, 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 because I'm looking up at a vase from the floor. And it's like, it has like, it's like a silhouette kind of, because the sun is like going past it. But I just remember looking at the image of this and being like, wow, that is so beautiful. And it was the first time I've ever been like,
wow,
looked at like the
you appreciate the beauty of something.
Yeah,
you appreciate the aesthetic of something.
This vase. Yeah.
A backlit vase. That's that we've never had something like this.
I mean, the combination of a backlit vase and Blue Man Group, and that's Gallatin.
That's Gallatin, babe.
That's the Gallatin School of Individualized Study.
That's why, yeah. That's me.
That's you, baby.
That's me.
Talk. Okay. Can we all go around the table? I've been thinking about this.
Okay. I love that already.
Would you just call this a screen memory?
Yeah.
Is this a common thing? I don't know
about
this.
It's like a psychoanalytic idea.
Okay.
So it's like usually it's like related to trauma, but.
Fine.
Okay. I literally have one of those.
But it is it's a visual memory that is preserved as like a single image in your mind that holds like a lot of psychic content to it.
But like.
Whoa.
Does it matter if there's not that much action going on? Like, well, you, like for you, it's you looking at this face.
Yeah.
And like that's pretty static.
Yeah.
Like, that's great. Because mine is something similar where I'm just sitting on the kitchen floor. I'm like 4 years old and I'm playing with something, but I'm looking down. This is insane. This sounds insane. It just sounds so abstract and like who cares?
But, no,
like,
I'm with
it's
you.
Just me looking at the door to our basement and that's it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing, there's no other detail, but it's so livid. Yes. Not livid, lucid.
Vivid.
Yeah, vivid. Yeah. Vivid.
Livid means lucid and vivid.
That's
right?
Exactly.
It's a rule of culture. It's rule of culture number 99.
Yes. Livid means lucid and vivid.
That's what that word
doesn't
means.
Doesn't mean angry.
No.
Okay. So that's mine. What's yours?
Okay, so my parents really never fought.
Yeah.
They're and I don't want to like say this and qualify them to all the listeners as parents who fought or had this kind of relationship. But one time, I think I was literally like 3 years old.
Yeah.
I remember sitting in my living room on the ground and my parents were having an argument. Mm. And my mother, Katrina Rogers, who is not like she is not a she doesn't fight. She flipped our kitchen table.
Wow.
She took that kitchen table and went boof. And it was like, I've never seen anything like it. And I just remember looking at it and I'll never forget it.
That's
and literally,
trauma.
Yeah, my mother has never done anything like that in the 25 years since I remember this happening. But I think it is like a trauma recollection.
Yeah, it is a trauma.
Because it was watching something happen that was so out of the ordinary. And I will never forget it. And I'm not even kidding. Nothing has ever happened like that ever since.
Isn't it crazy? Like the threshold for trauma when you're a kid.
Yeah. And I was truly a toddler.
Yeah.
And I remember it's imprinted.
Yeah.
I have a lot of parental fighting.
Yeah, yeah. I have like one of those too.
Yeah.
But I just remembered I was traumatized once because I was in
one time
line.
I was traumatized.
Okay, so let me tell you about my trauma. So I was in line at a Wetzel's Pretzels.
Whoa.
I was probably 5.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I was very, very, very young. And there was this girl who was wearing like a spaghetti strap, like black top, and she had like a lot of eyeliner on, and she was, you know, a teen.
Yeah.
And I was looking at her and she was with these two boys and she reaches into her like bra and she pulls out a cigarette and she had this look on her face of like pure mischief and like wrongdoing. And I remember looking at this and being like, I'm alone now.
What?
Watching this evil thing happen. And I am so scarred by like the side of humanity.
Yeah.
Like watching this person do this wrong act.
Oh,
and I was so like, it was so, I mean, like, you know, it was nothing. But at the time, I was so affected.
You were
by
scandalized.
This. I was so scandalized. Wow. It really.
If you were to Eternal Sunshine yourself, like, you, or no, what happens in the movie is that he, like, does, he hides her in his childhood memories. Right?
Yeah, I think it's something
that
right?
And
that.
So it's like him being bathed in the sink by his mom. I feel like that is like something where if you were to go back and like erase stuff, or if you were to couch, let's say you were to get an Eternal Sunshine like one of your exes, like you would hide that person in that memory of the Wetzel's pretzels. Yeah. Sorry, I don't know where I'm going with this. I just...
This girl looked just like Avril Lavigne.
Pure mischief and wrongdoing. That's why we remember.
Pure mischief.
That's why I remember, because she was a star.
It was Avril.
I feel like it might have been. It's like the you know, the timeline adds up.
Totally. She would have been roughly 30.
Yes, exactly.
She is like 50 years old now.
Which I love.
Which we love.
She's an older woman. 50, of course, being 50. Older. Wow. Do you seek out... When's the last time you saw Blue Man?
Honestly...
Because you could go at any time.
I could go. I walk by that, you know, the Astor place.
Yes.
That's the shitty place to see it, though. I'm sorry, no shade. But if you're going to go, you got to go to Orlando.
Stop it. Matt is... For people listening, for people who work there, who listen, Matt is lying. It's a bit.
I'm kidding. It's just a smaller space, and I like to enjoy my content with a large number of people.
Exactly. And if you are in Blue Man and you are listening, reach out to me. Maybe a couple comp tickets. You know,
of course,
I could get on board with that.
I also can see you doing it like once a week. Like I don't want
like my side gig.
I don't want it to take up a lot of your time because I want you to be, of course, pursuing the comedy. And
once a week.
Like, I think it's probably easy to pick up. Although here's the thing: with those balls they throw in each other's mouths and shit, what's the deal?
All the paint, and the drumming.
Right.
Yes.
What's the deal? Is there a trick going on, or are they really catching these balls in their mouth every time without fail?
They have.
I forgot about that.
That's sicko to me.
They have mouth eye coordination.
That was actually, now that I remember that now, there was also a sexual component, I think, to this
whole
thing. I'm
going to say, like, they're all, they're probably good at fucking.
Are you sure?
I think every Blue Man
are
is
you
good
sure?
at sex.
Before you say that, are you
I
sure?
I want you to be sure.
I'm 100% sure.
Oh my God.
They have to be good.
You know what? Yeah, you're right.
They're good at bodies.
I wonder how many of the Blue Men are gay.
I wonder if a Blue Man would be gay for me.
I bet. I mean, honestly, you're expressing a lot of interest.
I feel like that's so interesting that, like, when we talk about people who are good at sex, like, in just judging by the thing they do that's not sex.
Yeah, right. You're like, I bet they could fuck.
Like, I bet that dancer is a good, has
a good
sex.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay. I don't know.
Yeah, you have no concept.
Yeah.
You're right.
One time, I've spoken about this once. Sudi tried to, like, set me up with one of her friends, and I told her, I was like, I just can't picture having sex with them. And she said to me something that always stayed with me. And
what
she
did
was
she
like,
say?
She was like, well, you know, Matt, everyone has sex. And I was like, huh, that's true.
Is it?
There's a populace that is asexual, but like if someone's expressing a sexual interest, that means they have a sexual interest and they have sex. Mm. So not being able to picture someone fucking, you'd be shocked because they probably fuck.
Oh God.
But you're saying you can't, were you saying you couldn't picture them fucking anybody?
I just was like, I couldn't see them in a sexual way. And she was like, well, they are a sexual being.
But you can see them having sex
with you. But that doesn't turn
you
on. Yeah. There's a difference.
Of course.
Right. Like me imagining my parents having sex doesn't turn me on.
Right.
But I know it happened.
Yeah, it's probably happened a couple times.
Oh, it doesn't mean that you date your parents.
It doesn't mean I'm gonna send them a flirty DM.
Sorry.
My sister one time was home and she said that she found condoms in my parents' bathroom. Oh, and I was like, God. Why did you tell me that?
Oh my God.
That is so insane. I found like when I found a condom in my brother's room, ugh. I was like, another trauma.
That
was a trauma. I found condoms in my parents' drawer, and it was truly.
Oh my God!
It like destroyed me. I don't know why.
God, why do you, I just like now that we're talking about parents using condoms? I'm like, don't they just always go raw?
That's the thing is I was like,
I thought the whole thing about parents was like raw sex.
I
thought that was the whole thing about parents. Well, I guess like this was like right before my mom went through like the final change.
Yeah,
and I think like you got to be careful because. I mean, what if you got pregnant at like 49?
Oh, I know.
That would be a tough one.
Sure.
Be a tough position to be put in.
Forgot about pregnancy.
You forgot all about pregnancy.
Yeah.
You know, these parents can't just get on prep and do whatever they want. Like you kids.
But we don't age out of disease. Isn't that
we
sad?
Sure don't.
I know.
It's actually a rule of
culture.
Well,
that's why there's a lot of that. It's a rule of culture.
Yeah, rule of culture.
It's a rule of culture number 88. We don't age out of disease. Okay,
well,
fine.
That's why there's like gonorrhea and syphilis and like, you know, geriatric homes. Yeah.
I'm like, wow, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
I hope that I keep hoeing.
I thought you were about to say, yeah. I hope I get gonorrhea when I'm old.
Basically.
I mean, yeah, if you were in our old age to tell me like, oh my God, I don't know if we'll be in the same home.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like I'll probably give you a ring and or whatever method of communication we're having at that time. And you say, oh my God, this just happened. I got gonorrhea. I'll be like, yes, bitch.
Yeah,
I feel
right?
like if we're like 88 years old and you tell me you got gonorrhea, I'd be like, slay.
Yeah.
I know Sage is technically like a place for
elderly
queer people. I feel like we should open up
an LGB home.
Yes. LGB home. No T. Sorry.
LGB.
Sorry. No T.
No math. I think that would be so fun.
That's what I've always wanted.
That's like a sitcom.
That's a really good sitcom.
I mean, Golden Girls.
Golden Girls. I think that. This sounds so chummy and gross and dumb. I truly hope we all end up in the same place.
Yeah, when we I hope are so too.
Heaven.
Which is Fire Island.
Fire Island.
Where the swans are.
God, how much longer does Fire Island have? Sorry
well,
to bring it.
I was about to say.
Sorry to like, bring it here, but
when
like.
When we were on our trip, one of the things that was so like moving was looking at the houses that were abandoned because the shore was creeping up so far. I mean, the whole island's just disappearing. Yes. So there are houses that were close to the shore that have to be abandoned because they're just falling into the sea.
It's a real thing. Like that, I think people I think people like they don't like to think about it, but I mean,
truly, like,
even just Hurricane Sandy alone, I can tell you from growing up there. It took a serious toll on that. I mean, it's different now.
Yeah.
It looks different.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to fuck up infrastructure, then, like, it will change everything about how that place functions.
So we have to take that seriously.
Like, I think, honestly, it's got another, like, 15 years.
Oh, my God. It's so sick.
Yeah.
15 tops.
I mean, you have to think, and not to get all morbid, but it gets worse every year. I mean, these storms happen with more frequency. Actually, this hurricane season was mild, shockingly.
Uh-huh.
And that's with the tragedies that happened. But remember, like, I mean, the devastating hurricane that happened very early in the hurricane season. And the way I feel was like, oh, well, obviously this is like going to be like the way it is. Like, this is the beginning of the end. And then after that, to be honest with you, like, all things considered, we had a mild hurricane season.
Yeah. This past year, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's another thing about like the L train, like kind of staying open, is it's like, the way I feel about it is kind of like, honestly, keep it open because you don't want to spend
another
millions and millions and millions of dollars fixing it and then just for to get fucking
but
wrecked
isn't part
again.
Of what they're trying to do to like make it hurricane proof or something?
Right. I mean, I guess that would have, that's, you'd have to like do something really, 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 really sound to make it like hurricane proof, and that's got to be the next thing you do, because don't just fix it to the best of its ability now, because I mean it'll just get fucked up again.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, what I always imagine is this is so stupid, but I remember seeing once, like after Sandy, one of the things they could do is just put a big balloon in the tunnel, and it fills up the whole tunnel with this balloon. So that no water gets down in there.
Holy.
And now that I'm thinking about this, I mean, I don't think it really would work. But like,
would have to be some kind of balloon.
It would have to be a big balloon.
A big thick balloon.
It would have to be big and thick, filling out the whole hole.
Yes.
Yeah, and it would be so massive. Yes. And then it would be, you know, there would be no water damage.
Wait, I'm so horny.
I know.
Balloon.
Can you imagine a
really
balloon
hard.
That thick?
Oh, shit.
Ow.
I know.
Ouch.
Talk about
I mean,
ouch.
Can we, first of all, can we just say ouch?
Ouch.
We had a long discussion about bottoming before we got on air.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Did we talk about that? Yeah, we did.
That was not on air, but we talked about bottoming and, you know, the preparation that we have to go through. And it's not unlike
it's
the
not
L train.
Like, it is not unlike the L train. I mean, let me tell you, by the time you're 30, you've had a couple Sandies, you know?
Oh, honey. Oh, honey. Oh. That's actually rule of culture. Yeah. By the time you're, that's rule of culture number 101.
One.
Yep.
Like the Dalmatians. By the time you're 30, you've had a couple of Sandys.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly right.
Oh my God. But I just want a Sandy that stays.
You want a Sandy that
I want a Sandy that I can get used to.
I mean, yeah.
There's only been a handful of Sandys.
We're about to get a lot of Sandys that we can get used to.
I just want to say, you know what I realized?
What?
Very few people that I've had Sandys multiple times, that I've experienced multiple Sandys with.
I've only had sex with the same person more than once. That's only happened like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like 2, 3 people.
I don't know. Like, maybe overshare, but who the fuck am I kidding?
Whatever.
I've literally talked about everything. But my number is very high,
yeah.
But the number of people that I've been with more than once is actually very low.
The meaningful ones.
I hate just having sex with someone just once.
Yeah.
Because like I feel like that first time I'm like,
never counts.
What is going on? Like, yeah. Who are you? Why are you here? Like, yeah. You know, what's up?
What's up?
Who are you? Why are you here? What's up?
Yeah.
The three questions.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so I was always like, let's just have a relationship and like have sex.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know. Sometimes like I'll have a fucking amazing time the first time. And then the second time it's like, sometimes I feel like maybe that first time it was so good because you were discovering someone's body for the first time. And then the second time it's like, been here, done that. See you later.
Hang it up. I'm not turned on by the discovery.
Me neither.
I'm always like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, here we go. You know, whoa.
That's what makes Grindr so dangerous for me. Like, it's a slippery slope. Like, I'm not on it right now because, like, the thing for me is, like, finding someone out. And then I'm like,
yeah. What does that mean? Because for me, it's like the second time, it's like, oh, this is familiar. And there doesn't have to be this, like, learning curve around it. What is it about you? You just want it. You live for the moment where they take their shirt off for the first time.
No, I just like, I don't know. I think it's fun to experience someone, and then I almost feel like it's a sicko thing. But once I've experienced someone sexually, like we've done it. You know what I mean? Like, and
so, interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That's like, interesting. That's a way that I am.
Yeah. Well, that's beautiful.
It's not what I want for myself. I'd like to have a meaningful relationship.
Yes.
And I'm not saying I haven't, but it's just like I realized that about myself when I fully like committed to finding out more about myself sexually.
See, I wish that I could take a page from your book. I wish that it could be more like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like quicker or something, or like
I think we're I'm not there. I'm not there anymore either. I'm just like, I don't like that. I don't know.
If it's like if it's very, very scripted in terms of like, this is what we're gonna do.
Yeah.
Like where you like that, I like that, let's do that. Yeah. And then that's that.
It depends on what you're looking for, I think. You know what I mean? Like, I think you, Bo and Yang, are looking for a relationship. And so I think that's why the concept of just having sex with someone one time isn't appealing to you. I don't think where I'm at right now, I don't think I'm looking for a relationship. I think I'm looking to have
nice
experiences.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so it just depends on what you're. There was probably a time in my life where I was like horrified at the fact of like, you know, sleeping with a bunch of people. Mm-hmm, but
now it's what you want.
Do you consider yourself like a slut?
There was a time when I considered myself a capital S. I don't think I ever considered myself a slut, but whenever Sudi would call me a slut, I was I could understand where she was coming from.
And she was calling you that in like a pejorative way. Like.
She one time, I actually thought about this on the subway ride over. She literally turned to me one time and said, "You fucked every one of my gay friends that I've introduced you to." And I was like, I don't think that's true. And also, like, she said fucked. like she thinks she doesn't know
exactly what went down.
I have hooked up with a bunch of people she's introduced me to, or at least. Because I think it's a thing of like, let me put my two gay friends together,
right?
Which is like,
so that's on her.
No, but it's not necessarily bad because I did I did hook up with them. You know what I mean? It was mutually beneficial for all.
But for her to be like, wait a minute, it's like that. Well, yeah, you orchestrated.
But also, it was your choice. Like you introduced.
The thing is, like, yes, I did sleep with them and had a great time, and so I guess at the time, like, to be jokingly called a slut, I was like, yes. Why are you a slut?
Me?
Yeah. Have you been a slut?
I don't think I don't know. Sometimes I feel like slutty.
Right.
Yeah.
But I like that. But then like, I don't think in action, like my life, I am a slut.
Right.
I would say that I like have the psychology of a slut.
Yes.
But not the behavior.
Are you a slut is the title of it.
Are you a slut? But sluttiness is a state of mind. What was that? That
it is a state of mind.
That video, that clip of that there's this girl on Twitter where like it was a slut march, and then like this like conservative pundit was there a reporter was there, and he's like, why are you calling it a slut march? You're proud to be a slut.
Yeah.
And she was like,
oh, what's her name?
She's
so cool.
She's so cool. She's like the coolest.
She's an actor.
Person.
She's really cool.
Yes. And she was like, I'm a slut. You're a slut. Your grandma's a slut. Your mom's a fucking slut. We're all fucking sluts here. It's like, get over it. Like, we're all sluts.
It's also like, it's when you say you're not slut shaming, you're just, you're taking a word and being like, I've had sex with people and I enjoy it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's all.
That's all it is.
I think looking back, it's like, I go through periods.
Yeah.
I go through periods where it's like, I would like to, but to be honest with you, sometimes it makes me a little nervous. It really depends who it is. Like, now that I know more people, it's like, I don't know. Here's the thing.
Also, like, for me, it's like, now that I'm like, there's more and more people who are like learning who I am online.
Jojo, yeah.
So like, I get more people like contacting me, reaching out to me.
Uh-huh.
And so it is this weird thing of like, there's all like, you know, and people flirt, you know.
And people flirt, and you're like, how do I receive this?
Right. Are you guys open?
We are open.
You are open. Beautiful. Okay, so then it's like, it's on the table. So, I mean...
But I was like, no, I've just been cheating this whole time.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, what I was saying was, like, the kind of people I'm around on a daily basis are all people that I know. And there's that thing of, like, hooking up with your friends, which is, like, many in the gay community are just kind of like, we can do this and it's fine. Right. I don't know where I'm at with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, and it's all about how you want to spend your time and how you want to negotiate that afterwards. Like, we were talking with Brandon Scott Jones about this. I was, if I had to put a number on it, I've probably hooked up with, at some point, like, maybe nearly 50%.
Of what?
Of my gay friends.
Oh, okay.
I've like,
but I also don't think it's that high.
I like usually almost every guy that like I've hooked up with casually, I am friends with.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
because
great.
Like, I don't know. I feel like that's part of what's so nice about being a gay guy is that you're kind of like a horny idiot, and then you can just like move on.
But
you
it's
know?
The stakes off
it's
of it.
It's that you're friends first, and then you hook up with them.
No,
I've had
both.
I've had the fucking reverse happen too many times, and I'm like,
this.
Wait, describe that.
Where it's like, I'll be dating someone, and then it's like, let's stay friends.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I don't.
Yeah, that's
is
lame.
This healthy? Well, I don't know.
It's and also, you didn't necessarily start this particular relationship with them because you wanted to be friends,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
but it's like I value.
Well, that's like heartbreak. That's different. And I've definitely been heartbroken by people before, and then. Like, if the opportunity arose where I was, like, going to be friends with them, then it was like, I guess I have to. And that's usually only if I have to because they're, like, in that community that I'm in.
Right.
But otherwise, I would avoid them, you know?
Yeah.
Well, literally some of my closest, I mean, like, Dave and I, like, we started our friendship.
With a hookup.
Hooking up.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's kind of like, you can do both,
right.
But it is like a conversation. Like, I recently hooked up with a friend, like, within the last 6 months, and I wanted to have a conversation where it was like, this please can't make things different.
Right.
Like, cause that would just, I just really don't like
totally
that.
I just, it's funny though, but like I'm listening to you guys talk about this and I'm like, I don't have that same thing. And listen, y'all.
Yeah.
It's not, it's just like, it's fine if it's not like that for you. I'm
right.
Like, oh, that's just not my reality, which is beautiful.
And I also don't want people to, because this is another thing I'm sensitive to, which is like the gay community, we kind of decided it's a certain way, or like it's widely perceived that it's a certain way.
Right.
Like, yes, we're gay. We hook up with each other and that's that. And it's like, I've also experienced that not happening. So don't think that has to happen.
I also
happen.
Think it's like one of those things where like that same statistic about like drinking college where it's like you go in and you're like, everyone's drinking. But then it turns out that like actually
not
only like 40% of the population is drinking or something.
Right,
I feel like
it's
the same thing with sex.
Yeah, right.
Right.
And gay men,
and
probably.
And because sex is sexy, and it's like put it on this pedestal, and it's something that's sold to us, and it's something we're supposed to be doing all the time, and you see media where it's like, so often in gay media, like if there's two gay characters, they have hooked up, or they've been on a date, or something like that. It kind of does give this perception that like that is how all gay friendships begin, and like, I mean, literally the most important relationship in my life is a platonic gay friendship. And so we were talking to Brandon Scott Jones about how, like, on the show, the other two that he's on, like, there's a platonic gay friendship, and it's so great to see.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because that's not really depicted in media. It's really not.
No.
Yeah, that's true. Or if it is, it's like, people don't give a shit. Or yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I want to see more things of like, you know, that's why I really liked the end of Big Little Lies, is because it was like women.
Killing a man.
Like, the show largely was marketed and perceived as this thing of like women kind of like
catfighting,
and like it's these rich, privileged white women largely that like are gonna like fight. And then what the show actually was about how instinctually they had each other's back because of this shared experience. And, you know, I would like to see that represented with the gay community more. I would like to see, and that's why I really like Insecure. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you see these, like, I like seeing things where it's like a depiction of community that is a depiction of capital C community.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, me too. That is so, like, it's so refreshing to see that. Because then it's like, finally, we get to see something different.
Yeah.
Like, something real. It feels real. It feels more real. I don't know.
But that is missing, where it's like, you don't see these depictions of like queer people just being like just coexisting without that thick of a sexual layer to it. It's just like,
I mean, there was like Looking,
but then Looking was about dating and sex though. I mean, like and I think Looking succeeded on very many levels, but I think like it definitely fell short in that for me it felt very cast and also like I get it. Like it was,
you know what? Still an important show.
I think it was important, and we scrutinize it because it
is the only thing. It's that thing where it's like people shat on Joy Luck Club when it came out because it was the only thing that was meant to represent this experience, and then every Chinese person turned on it because they were like, "Well, this is stereotypical. This demasculinizes Asian men. It's bad. It's this. It's like, well, you're pinning all the shit on it because it's the
only
thing.
One. Yeah.
And I think it's like, with Looking, like, whenever anyone was like, why would you criticize this? It's the only thing we have. It's like, no, there's got to be some place in the middle because you have to be able to be critical of art, especially art that represents you and your experience, or touts to represent your experience.
Touts to.
And also at the same time, it's like, appreciate something for what it is and what it is doing right. Yeah, and that's just literally having a discussion about something.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I mean? It's like, you don't have to get angry or like overly protective. Like, we can talk about these things.
We all just need to be Katrina Rogerses. We need to
flip a table
once every 25 years.
Yes.
Flip a table, babe.
She's due for a table flip now.
I can't wait.
I hope that she, I'm trying to think, is she strong enough to flip a table now?
I think so.
Side table?
Yeah, like a smaller table maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think she can flip a table for sure.
She's a flipper.
She's able-bodied. Okay. I think it's time.
It's time for I Don't Think So, Honey.
You two both have a look in your eye like you have. You both literally announced before we recorded that you guys have. You have some.
I have one that I think is like a true I Don't Think So, Honey.
Okay, here we go. I think I have one too. It's just, it's cooking. So
I'll
let you
go first.
And by the
way, I Don't Think So, Honey is our segment where we take 1 minute to go off on culture. We are going on tour. You can buy tickets to us being on tour.
Yes.
We don't have a website, but they are on my website, and you can find them online if you Google search Last Culturista's tour.
You can do it. I trust you.
We trust you.
Okay, this is Matt Rogers' I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I don't think so, honey, when someone says on their story, new post alert. Bitch, we can see it. Like, also, it's like, I don't necessarily love this because it's like, girl, we got to deal with Amber Alert. We got to deal with Red Alert. I don't need new post alert. I also just think like, you know what? If you post, we could see it. If we're following you, we can see it. I also just think, like, new post alert, I just, like, if I'm being alerted at something, there should be some cause for alarm.
30 seconds.
Like, I don't know. I just, like, and I'm talking about this as someone who, like, be posting on social media. But I think new post alert is, like, another level where it's kind of like, that's not self-aware. You need to be a little bit more self-aware.
Sure.
And it's usually thoughts that do this.
15 seconds.
And the new post alert usually kind of, it's never about like new post alert where you can find information for my show. And I'm not slut-shaming here.
5 seconds.
But it's usually new post alert and it's like a thotty picture. And it's like, bitch, I've already seen it. I probably already liked it. And jacked off to it.
And that's 1 minute.
So I don't know. New post alert, I have a little bit of an issue with.
New post alert. I mean, I think they're trying to like subvert the algorithm and just be like, make sure I get eyes on this.
And maybe they're being funny.
Probably not. And it like, to generalize with abandon, it usually is thoughts.
Yeah.
And we love thoughts, and they're an important part of our economy, but like, you don't have to do that. I
you
agree.
Don't need
I
to.
Mean, I've, most of the time, I've literally already liked the picture because if you were a thought that I follow, you're probably popping up at the top of my Instagram story because Instagram is deeply evil.
I can't.
And knows I'm horny.
I can't like too many thought photos because otherwise, on my Discover page, it's all thought photos.
Yeah.
No, and I'm and like, that's I don't like want
too much.
All
it's
of
just like,
yeah.
When you go to your Discover page and it's literally all shirtless men, that's when you know you have to seek treatment.
I know.
Yeah. There you go.
That's bad.
But we need them to thrive. Yeah. Thoughts.
I mean, they are, like, as you said, a huge part of our economy, especially yes. rule of culture number 22.
Thoughts are a huge part of our economy.
Okay. I think I have something. Which is booming, by the way, our economy.
Our economy? Oh,
and I'm so
yeah.
sick of hearing about it because, shut up, things are not good.
Things yep.
things are not good. I don't need to hear that there's more jobs. Like, which, oh. you know what I mean? Like, I'll that's an, I don't think so, honey, for another time.
There you go.
This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey on this, the episode. With Joe Castlebaker, an incredible episode of Lost Culturistas that we've enjoyed. And his time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. These recipes that have Asian in the title and there's nothing fucking Asian about them. There's mayo and a chicken salad Asian medley, whatever the fuck. No, my people did not throw almonds into their pork, okay? I don't know what Asian meatballs are, okay?
Hashtag what Asian?
Hashtag what Asian? My ancestors did not toil in the fields during the Cultural Revolution in China. They did not wish upon a jade amulet for you to appropriate an entire fucking continental name just so you could sell and peddle
15 seconds.
Your bullshit granola mix onto me, honey. So listen, if you want to call it something and make it exotic, just say that there's raisins in it. I'll be sold. I love raisins. I'm a raisin bitch. Don't call it Asian.
And that's 1 minute. Mm. I think that was important.
That is Thank so
you.
True.
Thank you very yeah. much.
Just because it has scallions doesn't mean it's
Asian. Yeah. Honestly, what do you think is that? Why do you think they do that?
To make it seem more interesting. Because they can't be like, well, it's a chicken salad sandwich. No. We gotta get clicks. We're going to call it an Asian chicken salad. We're going to do little things of daikon in there. And yeah. we'll call
I would
it
assume, whenever if I ever see something with Asian in the title, I would assume as a consumer of food that they're talking about like whatever dressing is on it or like whatever sauce is on
or
it.
It's
like,
just, it, they're really just projecting an entire culture onto one ingredient, usually.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's like,
yeah, like ginger.
It's marketing, it's branding.
It's ginger, yeah. Oh, we're doing ginger. You know, oh, garlic's Asia, an Asian aromatic.
Oh my
Let's
God, can
do
you
that.
Imagine? That is so insane.
It's so fucking crazy.
It's fucking crazy.
That's so
dumb.
Stupid, yeah.
Anyway.
And that was an I Don't Think So, Honey that needed to be said.
Thank yeah. you. I think we're getting back into the form. You and I, because Matt and I, everyone else like does amazing I Don't Think So, Honeys, and you and I are just so...
We've done so many.
We've done
so,
but
do so
now,
many,
but now I'm really like starting to understand like, how to get back into the saddle, onto the saddle.
Hero's journey, you know?
Hero's journey. Yes, thank you, Joseph Campbell. Okay, this is Joe Castlebaker's I Don't Think So, Honey, and his time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. People that need to play music during sex.
Wow.
Or people that even don't even need to, but just like do it anyway. Like, what mood are you trying to set?
Yeah.
Like, I don't need you to set my mood. If I'm in the mood, I will be in the mood. I don't need Lord to set the mood for me. And if Lord sets the mood for you, what does that mean about you?
Oh.
Does tennis court make you hot?
Yes.
Does tennis court make you hard?
Oh,
I don't think so, honey. I don't think so, honey. If you are playing, okay, let's say that you, maybe not even Lord, maybe it's something a little more appropriate, like some kind of electronic thing
yes.
like that. Like, this is not like the moment where you like crack the code in SVU. Like I'm giving you head right
yeah,
now. You
yes.
know what I mean? Like, this is not the moment for that kind of music. Or even like, I don't even know any kind of music. All music, the
Five
only
seconds.
Music I want is to hear breathing and Ooh. The air conditioner, and that's it.
Oh, and that's 1 minute. Wow. Okay, I have fucked to Lord. And I could fuck to the song 400 Lux on repeat.
Is there okay?
I'm not
really. Wait,
yes,
what?
I fucking love Lord.
I'm not cracking
wait,
the code.
Does the song make you horny?
Yes, it really does.
Wait,
and
that
I actually,
is so crazy,
I know. I have to tell you, Joe. I get extremely horny to Lord.
Here's the thing, though.
Oh my God, that to me
What about like a Frank Ocean thing?
No.
Like, what? I don't there connect with Frank.
There is no music on earth.
D'Angelo.
That will make me horny.
Really? Okay, you're not listening to the right playlist. I have a playlist on my Spotify called LOL, and it's my sex playlist.
Oh my God, I love that.
I'll send it to you.
Yep.
And one time I had sex with someone, and they said, and after we had sex, they said, that was a great fuck playlist. And I was like,
that's
good.
Joe, I get what you're saying, but I also, every it depends on the context, I think.
I like to light candles, play some fucking...
Oh, God. See, to me,
candles,
that's like...
No.
Wordless music. Here's the thing. What about music without words?
The wordless music is the worst. Because the wordless music, it's... Oh, I love this. I'm not cracking the code in SVU. I'm giving you head. That is a beautiful poll quote from Joe's IDTSH right there.
That's really good.
But wordless music is creepy.
I don't think so.
Yeah, it is.
But you said it's more appropriate.
I would definitely not choose music with lyrics for songs. If you had to have music playing during sex, like at least make it an instrumental.
What about like Rocket by Beyoncé? Like that is like the
Here's the thing.
Even the songs that are like explicitly sexual, it's like, come on. Let me take my time.
Yes.
Maybe I don't want to feel that right now.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like the third or fourth time that Henry and I hooked up, like when we first started dating, we actually like on accident 1+1 by Beyonce came on.
Oh, that's too much.
And it
that's
heightened it so much to where it was like, I think in the both of our minds, we were like, this is too much.
But you know why? Because when you're playing music, that's basically a threesome. That's
a threesome, you're right,
with that artist, you're having a threesome.
Wow, that's a rule
of culture. And threesomes are always bad.
And threesomes are very bad.
Never had a three.
Really?
I bet you've done threes.
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
I've had a few. Yeah. Mm. But not with music.
Galatin.
No music.
Galatin. That would make it a quadruple. I would go back to Galatin and study threesomes.
I would go back
to... Oh my God, you would be welcomed with open arms.
I don't know, you guys. I think we're all disagreeing about this music thing.
I think I'm in between the two of you.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What music would you play? What would you select?
Okay, let me. I truly. This
pulling
is,
out the phone.
I'm pulling out the phone. This is my very basic fuck playlist that I have not ever used. Like in actual.
Do I have mine? I think mine's on iTunes, and it's also old.
And
I
it's
don't
old,
have,
and like it's like
shaking
not,
my head.
It's not. Hold on. Oh, maybe I deleted it because I was fully ashamed of it. Oh, hold on. No, I
did it because my phone data was full, and okay. I can't figure out how to fucking.
This is so old. I have songs from like the very first XX album. So maybe that's in between like lyrical and instrumental.
Yes, yes, yes.
I have like, this is so bad. I have Marvin Gaye, Please Stay. I have Dr. Dre, Explosive. I have.
But do you see that?
Do you see here? Because I just pulled mine up. Go.
Oral, no, you're not even listening to mine.
The oral changes, A-U-R-A-L changes, are...
insane.
It's too much.
Like, you need someone there to orchestrate it then. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Having Marvin Gaye on there is very first thought.
I'm not impressed. I'm saying this is very first thought. Can I just read some of the ones?
Yes.
So bad. I have BJ the Chicago Kid. I have No Sleep by Janet Jackson. I have Hello by Erykah Badu. I have... Bliss by Mariah Carey off Rainbow. And then, like, that's it.
Whoa.
And I have, like, Frank Ocean stuff, and that's
okay.
It.
I mean, the first song that I saw on mine was Tambourine by Eve, which is Shake Your Tambourine, Go and Get Yourself, and which is just not for sex. And so I clearly made this when I was 23. And didn't know what the fuck.
And you refused to reveal anything else?
And I refuse.
I just embarrassed myself to so many people.
I mean, that actually isn't the playlist, because I believe it might just be at home on my iTunes.
Like,
but
a CD.
Because I don't...
Local files.
Local files.
Local files.
But follow me on Spotify, and I will be posting my sex playlist, LOL.
I love that it's called LOL,
It's called LOL, because I was, like, too nervous.
Of course.
Yeah.
That moment of... that's another, like, I don't
naming
think so,
playlist?
Honey. The, like, humiliation of naming a playlist.
Wait, that's so real.
It's like, what if someone really... It's my playlist title.
One of mine is called Inspired in all caps. And then I have my famous one is called Classic Diva.
Classic Diva.
Which everyone should follow.
What makes a good playlist title, you think? That is outwardly like cool.
You have to just not give a shit.
You have to just literally not care.
You have to just be like,
fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
I have one called Now. And like I don't know. It's like not
playlist
new
titles
songs.
Are so like vulnerable.
They are.
They're so vulnerable.
And they're but they're just so performative.
They're so performative.
My from Joyce Mondo.
Nobody looks at that.
No one cares.
Honestly, whenever anyone somehow I don't think so, honey. People who somehow find what I'm listening to on Spotify and like send
comment
me a screenshot
it.
Of it, I'm like, get out of my life, literally.
I know.
I
truly
do. I've been doing this thing where I do post my playlists on my story.
I know, but you have good taste.
I know you
do. You have
that,
good taste
you
in have music.
But is that a little? Is that a thing? But
no.
Do you guys think it's a thing where it's like? I think it might be a degree of like, I want to show people how cool I am.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's healthy. That's healthy.
For sure.
That's the sign of a healthy psyche.
You like being the arbiter of taste.
That's basically the same thing as new post alert. New playlist in there. Like,
No.
It's disgusting.
It's,
I'm
it's, no it's adjacent. It's adjacent.
No, guys,
it's adjacent.
Be
it's
honest.
More acceptable.
Be honest.
No, that's new fine. Playlist because you've cultivated
but also,
something.
Also, you're not a musician. Or you're not. Yes, you're, I mean, you're not making the music.
Yes.
You're saying, hey.
Which is even worse. It's even
it's not. It's different.
You are sharing something that you cultivated.
Exactly.
And that I'm proud
it's not
to admit.
It's not new post alert, which is you hiring someone to take a hot
right.
photo of you.
Sure, sure.
It's and it's
which
it's,
is also noble and beautiful.
Gorgeous. Okay, and we need you for the economy.
Thank you.
Never forget.
Never forget.
If you
never
were to stop, forget. This whole thing would crumble.
That's exactly right.
I loved this episode.
This was very good.
I know.
It gave me the tingles.
Give me the tingles. And Joe gives us the tingles.
I mean, clearly.
I try.
Okay. Oh my God, please check out Get Real. Matt and I have both done it with Max Werder. They're both so fucking funny.
Mm-hmm.
I watch them and I'm like, this is all I want to see ever in the
and
world.
And it can be all you ever see.
It can be all you ever see. So check them out every month at the Spectacle or at a rotating venue every now and then.
What is the last thing you want to say for right now to the Las Culturistas listeners? Because you'll be back, but what do you need to say to them that they need to know?
Wow.
As a Gallatin School of Israel, at the end of all your studies.
After everything I learned at Gallatin, I would say, you know, let go.
Let go.
Let yourself find. Go.
Go.
Let yourself find.
And then go.
Wow. Let go, let yourself find go,
and then go.
And then go.
Beautiful. Oh, my God.
200,000 later.
200,000. NYU, thank you so much.
Thank you, NYU, and thank you so much.
Wow, thank you, NYU, and thank you so much. And that reminds us of a song that we're going to finish.
As we finish with every song.
Every episode we finish with a song.
Thank you, next. Thank you, next. I'm so fucking grateful for my school.
Oh,
bye.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.